everyone, and welcome to HQ Overtime, the official post-game show for Raptors HQ, SB Nation's Raptors team site. My name's John Godis, and HQ writer Russell Peddle will be joining me momentarily to discuss Game 5 of the Eastern Conference Final between the Raptors and the Cavaliers. As always, you can submit your questions for us by tweeting at RaptorsHQ and myself at John Godis. That's J-O-H-N-G-A-U-D-E-S. And if you want to get notified first when this show's on the air, you can follow RaptorsHQ on Mixlr.com. Final score from this one was 116-78. The Raptors avoided a 40-point blowout narrowly, but that was right around the margin that they were down by pretty much from halftime in this one. It was a full-fledged blowout. For those reasons, this will probably be a shorter show, much to the happiness of my guest, Russell Peddle, and myself. I'm not going to say that I really want to talk about this one that much, but I'm sure the listeners out there are just as depressed as we are after watching that. Russell, let's start by talking about just the energy difference between these two teams to start the game. This was a bigger game for the Raptors, I think, but the Cavaliers came out like they had something to prove, and they really got the job done.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and you could tell right from the get-go that they were getting, they wanted to get Love involved early, and Kevin Love and Kyrie Irving, after like a 4-for-28 shooting performance last game, to come out and get them established, and that's just LeBron being LeBron and making sure that he's getting his teammates involved, and then he can flip the switch himself. Thompson was all over the glass the first few possessions. They were trapping hard on Lowry and DeRozan, and that flustered the Raptors' offensive flow. Luis Scola continued to suck. So there you go.
I mean, the big three were all great. Obviously, LeBron, you know, it seems so quiet, but he had 23 points, 6 rebounds, and 8 assists. It was not a quiet night for LeBron James. He even got to play a whole lot less than he did in the previous games, so a bad sign for the Raptors. If they were hoping that LeBron was going to wear down over the course of the series, he played just 31 minutes. Kevin Love was awesome tonight, 8 of 10, 25 points. He hit, I think, his first 6 or 7 shots from the field. He was just tremendous for a bounce-back game, and he was probably the focal point. Kyrie had 23, 9 of 17. But let's focus on Love. You said that the team, the Cavaliers, focused on getting him involved early. That much was apparent. This matchup, though, for the Raptors, it just seems like it's not going to work with Luis Scola starting at power forward. Is this going to change for Game 6, do you think? Or is this just a situation where the Raptors have to withstand Luis Scola minutes?
They might have to. I mean, I don't know how serious Patterson's wrist thing is. JV looked good in spurts, but I mean, we're at the point where Scola might have to eat up some big man minutes. But I do agree with, like, I've come around with the idea of Patterson playing with the second unit. His percentages bear that out. I mean, in the playoffs, he's shooting nearly 10% better from the field and like almost like 7 or 8% better from three when he comes off the bench. He just gets rolling with that unit. So I mean, In that sense, I agree with the leaving it like that, but at the same time, just like Scola cannot stick with Love at all, and if Love's going to be a big factor like he was in this game, I think he needs to have a quicker hook, because tonight, leaving him in just the first 6 minutes was like, you could tell right away within 2 minutes of the game that was not going to work. So I don't know if you change the starting lineup necessarily, but I think Casey needs to kind of, with the fact that the next game obviously being an elimination game, like if something is not working, you gotta go away from it more quickly.
Yeah, and the thing with Scola is like he can't guard him on the outside because he's not going to get out quick enough to make a good challenge on the shot. On the inside, Kevin Love is stronger than he is, and we saw examples of that as well where he was able to get inside and get wherever he wants. So there's really nothing Scola can do, and especially when he's trying his hardest to guard this guy, he's not active on the glass, and that's where the Cavaliers kind of killed them in the first quarter. Tristan Thompson was so active. I know he only had 10 rebounds in this game, but he affected so much on the inside. I feel like he was just that chaos guy that Biombo was in games 3 and 4. And he won that matchup in this game. And that was huge for the Cavaliers because they were able to feed off that. And the Raptors never got the second or third guy down there to help out on the boards. It seems kind of hopeless, but Biombo is so much of a better player at home. Is this just a home and away kind of thing for him with his performances?
I mean, that's what it seems like. I hate getting like overly simplistic with this whole home court advantage thing sometimes, but I mean, in this series, there's
It's
nothing
crazy.
like it's just it proves that, or not proves that, but there's just such a strong correlation with performance and being at home, and it shouldn't be that way. I mean, these are professional players that should be able to, you know, the team, it doesn't change 2 days. Like, we're 2 days away from a very huge win. Like, the team did not change suddenly because they changed, like, 'cause they traveled, you know? I mean, but yeah, I mean, the whole season, the home team has won every single game of this series dating back to the 3 games that they played during the regular season. And I mean, that bodes well for game six with the Raptors, but I mean, it doesn't really mean anything. Those types of stats you can't really hang your hat on. You can't really go like, oh, well, you know, the home team wins every game between these two, so yeah, the Raps are good for game six. It's like, no, there's a lot of really troubling stuff going on in this game, and it's testing my resolve in terms of, you know, I was just on the regular HQ podcast, the headquarters this week, and I was talking about how now we're at a point where everything is gravy. Like, no matter what, it's been a great season. Because regardless, the worst that can happen now is to bow out in game six at home in the Eastern Conference Finals, and that's pretty damn good. But after a game like that, you know, that's an embarrassing loss. Now, it's not a complete referendum on the Raptors, who they are as a team and who they've been for over 100 games now, playoffs and regular season combined. But they need to come back and react, because that was an embarrassing game to watch.
Yeah, and I mean, I said off the top that this might have been a bigger game for the Raptors because Game 7 is such a daunting thing when you're playing a LeBron James-led team, because he's still to this point, and I know he's a couple years past needing to do this for a team, but he still hasn't turned the second gear and decided to become a volume scorer, and he can still do that for stretches where the team needs him to. They just haven't needed it yet in this series or in this playoff run at all. So, in a game seven where if that's the last line of Cleveland's defense, you know that LeBron's going to go to that second gear and do whatever he has to do to win the game. That's why I felt like, game five might have been bigger for the Raptors, because he might still be sleeping down there and not letting that come out. But, not all is lost yet. We'll talk about game six in a minute. I want to briefly touch on Jonas Valanciunas. He checked in, I think, halfway through the second quarter. He played pretty productive minutes on the offensive end, but like we all predicted, it was awkward for him on the defensive end. He really doesn't have a good matchup. Tristan Thompson is a little bit more, he gets in, he's a little bit more, I don't know, he gets rebounds a little bit better than Valanciunas does. He just has a better nose for the ball, I think, is the best way I could put that. And then everything else is just a bad matchup for him. So on that end, it doesn't look that great for him in this series. But I mean, the offense was good to see, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, he came out and he hit all four of his shots, and he looked decisive at the beginning. You know, good positioning on his first layup there, and then he hit a little jumper, and you know, he didn't pump fake it three or four times before he shot. Like, he right away it looked like, okay, are we sure that he missed like the last 2.5 weeks? You know, he picked right up where he left off. But then at the same time, like, you know, he's always going to be he's not a finished product on defense, and especially in a series like this where he doesn't match up well. Thompson, like you said, not very well. And then on top of that, I mean, once they start playing Fry at center and Love, and once it gets to that, like, there's just no place for Valanciunas in this series. Like, it was great against the previous two teams that play with other big guys, but like traditional type centers. But you know, I don't want to say it was a like almost a blessing that he was hurt in the series, because that's obviously not a good thing to say, and I don't really mean that, obviously, because he was one of the best Raptors this entire playoffs. But realistically, he doesn't really fit in this series, and especially coming off of the ankle injury, where he's probably not 100%, and I mean, almost certainly isn't 100%, and at the very least is not in game shape because he's been off for so long, that, you know, working him in, I appreciated the fact that even that in a blowout, he managed to get some garbage time minutes to kind of get some work in, basically. But, you know, it was like a free practice, basically. But,
Yeah.
but,
That's not meaningful in any way.
no, exactly. And I mean, at the end of the day, I think you gotta go with who got you there. And right now, you gotta continue to roll with Biombo in game six, and if it stays close, Biyombo's got to be your go-to center just based on the circumstances of the injury and this matchup. And, you know, Valanciunas can play some spot minutes, or if, like, Biyombo gets into foul trouble or something, maybe then you look to him. But I don't think he should necessarily be forced into the rotation now when so much is on the line in Game 6 at home.
Yeah, it sucks because Biyombo, we have a big enough sample size now to know that Biyombo is going to be more successful in this series than Valanciunas is going to be. What did you think about that weird lineup we saw as the game was on the verge of getting out of hand? Maybe not quite. I think it was about 15-20 at this point when Casey rolled out for the first time ever. They didn't play at all together in the regular season, and since Biyombo joined the team, seeing Biyombo at center and Jonas Valanciunas at power forward. What did you think of seeing that?
I mean, I give Casey a lot of credit for throwing things at the wall to see if they'll stick in situations like this. And the timing of that, I was like, okay, well, like, this game is getting out of hand. The Cavs were up by 20 and were then going to their version of the lineup of death, what everyone's calling that that combination of LeBron. Well, everyone knows what it is anyway.
Yeah.
Going to that lineup, so to go with these two centers together, I mean, they're trying something. I mean, that's what that helped in, you look back to the Indiana series and the comeback had so much to do with going with that weird little lineup of small, like that small ball lineup. So yeah. Okay. Try something, see how it goes. But I mean, it only lasted a couple of minutes and you probably won't see that lineup get much run. You know, I think that was just an experiment and, you know, they got it scored 5-2 in those, like, little less than 3 minutes. It's too small of a sample to take anything away from it, but I think it's just too slow, and I can't imagine, like, you know, the Cavs have a counter where they can just put out a lineup with where they're taking both of those guys away from the basket, and then you've got two people that are going to be basically running behind the offense. So, you know, what's the point of it?
Yeah, I mean, there was one good example play where DeMar drove to the basket. He had beaten his defender, and he just ran into a wall of bodies because both Valanciunas and Biyombo were right under the hoop positioning themselves for a rebound. DeMar had to pull up and take a tough jumper when he could have gotten a layup if it was just one of them there.
It
just kills the spacing. And we knew that all year. We knew we would never see this lineup because those two guys play. They play to clean up the garbage, and this team feeds off both those guys doing it individually. And yeah, the spacing was just dead with both those guys on the floor. But you're right. It was a small sample size, and the game was already on the verge of being pretty much out of hand at that point. So, no harm, no foul at this point, you know.
Yeah, I'm okay with the attempt. I mean, like I said, if you're down big and you can't get anything to work, then, like, yeah, sure, get crazy with your lineups. But, I mean, I don't think we need to carry that over. Like most things from this game, there's not much to carry over from that into the next one.
No. And, I mean, it might be the only time we see those two guys play together on the floor, that 2.5-minute stint, because the word pregame was that Bismack Biyombo was going to come in at a lot higher price than even what we were projecting, you know, before this, coming at about $16-17 million a year. And we knew this summer that people were going to get some crazy money, and Biyombo has definitely played his way into a contract in that area. So I guess savor it while he's here, because there's no feasible way for the Raptors to both bring back DeRozan and pay Biyombo what he's going to be owed this offseason.
Yeah, we might literally only have one game left of Bismack Biyombo as a Toronto Raptor, and that's sad. It's just the circumstances with not having the bird rights and the way the contracts are formed, and now with the cap going up and how good he's been on this run, because he was still a little, like, you know, best kept secret through most of the season. Like, I don't think he would have necessarily gotten that without this playoff run.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. I don't think Masai Ujiri projected him becoming this good this quickly. I think the signing was kind of a stopgap because they needed a backup center, and he was just going to be a guy who was going to hold them up on the defensive end, but he's been all that and more, especially in this playoff run where he's kind of become a cult hero in Toronto.
Yeah, I don't know if I've ever seen anyone come and go so quickly and gain so much respect from the fan base and become such a cult hero, like you said, to only be here for 1 year. Like, you know, even the guys like Junkyard Dog and Reggie Evans and, like, those guys played here for multiple years, and then someone like Biyombo is just in and out like that, and it's going to break a lot of people's hearts when he signs on the dotted line with another team, because he there's no way he's And nor should he have to take any form of discount to stick with the team and keep the chemistry of the team together. You know, at the end of the day, they made a conference finals run, but you know, you can't expect him to make sacrifices to try and come back. Cause at the same time, like, you know, he's also earned the right to be a starting center somewhere in the league. And, you know, while the team has Valanciunas, and then obviously with the run that he was making earlier in these playoffs, you're not moving away from him. He has true breakout potential next season. Like, and he's still quite young. Mm-hmm. And Biyombo might be young, but we're not sure. But the thing with him is, you know, he's earned the right to go start somewhere else to make his money. And we can't afford him at that price. So it's time to, you know, I think game six, win or lose, the home crowd is going to give a big send off to the team. But I think I would like to think that if any point we get a last checkout for Biyombo, I think the crowd will give him a really good send off to at least. And from there going forward, I mean, geez, if he ever, anytime he comes back with no matter what other team, like, you know, he should, if I'm ever in the ACC when he's playing for the other team, I'll cheer my ass off when he touches the ball. Cause he's been, it's just great seeing players like that put it all out on the floor, and the team would never have gotten this far without him.
For sure. And this is kind of projecting a lot. I know there's still lots of playoff games to be played here, potentially, but definitely one on Friday. But I always think about the fact they paid Luis Scola $6 million, and they paid him, you know, Boston paid Amir Johnson $12 million a year over 2 years. And just the thought of how much easier this playoff run would have been with Amir Johnson as your starting power forward just kills me a lot with, yep. You know, money's a tough thing, and it's like, it's always right on the brink of being able to afford somebody. And, you know, the Biyombo news is unfortunate, but that's just, it's the reality of the business. And the Raptors are kind of on the verge here of losing some of the pieces that we've become so familiar with over the last 3 years, just because guys are owed their money at this point. So that's all out in the future, though. I'm sure we'll have other podcasts to discuss that money situation in the off season. Let's look at game six briefly here. We asked people on Twitter what their thoughts on this game would be, what their expectations were for the game on Friday at 8:30 Eastern. We got one response from Anthony Doyle. He said, "What I expect is to live and die by whether or not DeMar and Kyle hit shots, what we do in every elimination game." He's absolutely right. You know, DeMar and Kyle both did not show up tonight. They didn't shoot for volume. They didn't perform well at all. DeRozan was 2 of 8 for 14. Kyle Lowry was 5 of 12 for 13. But it's impossible at this point. You know, we've been doing this for almost 7 weeks now, these playoff games. We just... You just turn off any past ideas with these guys, because they could just turn it around the next time you see them. What are your expectations for Game Six?
I think it'll be a hard fought game. I think I don't see it with the home crowd and everything like that. Like, I can see the Raptors winning for sure, but I also don't think they'll lose in another blowout. Like, I just don't think that's possible I could eat crow on that, but I mean, I think that they'll fight. I think that Lowry and DeRozan have a tendency to bounce back, and both of them being so off tonight. I mean, one thing I'm looking at the box score now, DeRozan played 30 minutes and only had 8 shots. When has that ever happened?
Yeah, it's crazy.
I tuned out. I completely zoned out for like most of the second half, but the Twitter was much more interesting than the game. But my expectations for game six, it will be a hard fought game. I think they very much can force a game seven, or they can lose a hard fought game. And if they lose a game where they're at least in it, and you know, there's a chance in the fourth quarter, something to get the fans going. Like, you know, I'll try to forget this game just the same way as I forgot game one and two after seeing three and four. So, you know, I think that can still be a win for the fan base. And if they do win it, then, I mean, you know, all bets are off in game seven. So, you know, they're still in this. They can still do it. They can still, you know, make this improbable finals appearance and you know, really complete this underdog Cinderella story. And, you know, I think just the main thing is, not that I expect it, but I just really hope that they don't get eviscerated like this again. Like, I hope they come in with a good plan, like they can stop that damn horns play that they just can't seem to figure out. Like, I hope they spend a lot of time looking at that, and I hope that they really consider their lineups and their rotations, and that they just execute and find ways to, like, if the trapping thing is something that I don't want to see that be a problem either, because I know you only have one day in between these games, but you know, you've got a few very clear things the team needs to adjust to on both ends. Like, you know, we can identify it, they should be able to identify it, and they can't identify it. They're professionals, they know what they're doing. Even if we, you know, the armchair coaches don't like want to scream at them that they don't know what they're doing, they recognize that certain plays and certain lineups are a problem. So I just want to see them prepared and execute and, you know, leave it all on the floor. And from there, I'll probably be happy with the result.
Yeah, I mean, that's why game four was so enjoyable for me to watch, because it was so competitive. And they won a game that was competitive right down the stretch against a great team. And you're right, I hope that that's the case in game six as well. You know, the locker room's still closed at this point. They're obviously having a long discussion after this game. So, you know, we're expecting them to come out with a lot more fight in game six, and I think that's appropriate. Let's quickly go through some questions here. We've got a few on Twitter before we wrap this up. Sean Woodley really wants us to answer this question. Is it worth switching up the starting lineup once more for old time's sake in game six? We had discussed possibly moving Patrick Patterson into the starting lineup once again. Do you think it's actually going to happen, though?
I wouldn't be surprised if it did, because I like Casey has shown in these playoffs that he is willing to tinker like that. However, like I said, I don't know if he'll bother to do it this one, like in this game, but because that starting lineup worked in game three and four fine, right? So you don't want to. There were a lot of bad examples to how it doesn't work in this game, but you know they also broke even with it in previous games. So, you know, again, you weigh the pros and cons of what it does for your bench and what it does for your secondary lineups. So, I don't know. We very well could see it, but I'm not necessarily expecting it.
Right. Sean is telling me on Twitter now that he wanted me to read his game six prediction. So he says, Raptors fall just short in a close and fun game, and the ovation trumps anything we've seen at the ACC yet. You're probably right, Sean, but we prefer to have hope in a Game 6 situation. Anthony Doyle tweets a question in on Friday, can we just not do the whole Luis Scola thing? We kind of just addressed that, Anthony, but we would hope that in this situation we don't have to play Scola, but unfortunately it looks like that's going to be the case in this game coming up. Interesting question from William Cooney here. Game 6, thoughts on starting JV on Kevin Love and sitting Scola? Any potential in your mind to seeing JV start next to Biombo?
No, I as we discussed earlier, I just don't think that lineup is something that I would feel safe trotting out in a game 6 of like an elimination game in a conference finals. Like, it has the potential to be interesting. It's like the whole debate in the other conference finals, where like it was the idea of the Warriors going small versus the Thunder just going, like, putting Cantor and Adams in there and trying to get all the damn rebounds. Like, you could see that being a thing, but you want to make adjustments, but at the same time that feels like a mad scientist experiment more than anything else, and I'm not ready to commit to that. And and trust me, I'm not a big Scola fan and of what he brings on either end. You know, defensively he's a sieve, and on offense he does things like shoots it above the break three and then like crashes the boards unnecessarily, letting Love just completely leak out for a fast break score. So you know, everything he does frustrates me, but I mean, you do. I just don't see the potential in that lineup, I don't see the potential in it, it's just that I'm not confident enough that it can work.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. That's all we've got, though. Do you have anything coming down on the site in the next few days?
I'm going to be doing the stat breakdown of game 6, so...
Oh, thank God.
You know, win or lose, I'm going to have to... you know, I'll have some stuff to say, and hopefully it'll be good stuff. Thank God I don't have tonight's. Hackett is off toiling with that now as we speak. I told him just to write, one or two sentences about, like, you know, no one needs to care about this game. Move on. and I think that's enough. I think that's all the stats we need to know.
Yeah, that's all the content we need at this point. Thanks for joining me. I know it's always tough to do these games after tough losses, and it seems like you always get pegged with these shows. But appreciate you coming on.
I really appreciate it, John. Thanks for having me.
All right, so our next episode is Friday after Game 6. Look for the post-game thread on RaptorsHQ.com or on Twitter at RaptorsHQ. You can also subscribe to archived episodes of this show and our weekly podcast, The Headquarters, on iTunes. Give us a rating review there. It's always greatly appreciated. Thanks to Russell Petal, my guest today. That's HQ Overtime, everyone. Thanks for tuning in.